Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. We all enjoy the best things in life, or the best that we can afford, and often treat ourselves to them if we can, and I'm as guilty of that as anybody. But one of them, and it's not a sin, let's be very clear, but one of the things would be a fine and expensive wine or spirit, and it is for me, I have to say. Telling me more about the wines and spirits is Tim Robbins from long-established company Nichols and Perks, who are based in Stourbridge. And as I was saying earlier on, Dan Richards and I met Tim in Nichols and Perks back in late November, early December, on Small Business Saturday. And we were just blown away with the variety of products in the shop. But also, this is not just a wine shop. This is something, if you've never been in, you need to go and pay them a visit. And Tim joins me in the studio now. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening, Clive.
Thank you ever so much for coming in. For anybody who's not heard of Nichols and Perks, tell me a little bit about the company and its history, because it's been in business an awful long time.
It certainly has, yes. Well, we are located right in the middle of Stourbridge, opposite the Crown Centre, so it's about as central to Stourbridge as you can get. And we've got a very distinctive Dutch gable building, which dates back to the 17th century. And Nichols and Perks has been established as a wine and spirits merchant since 1797, when George III was on the throne and William Pitt the Younger was Prime Minister.
In those same premises,
yes.
My goodness me.
So the company's been operating out of that place ever since then.
I'm just doing the math. Is that about 225 years?
It's exactly 225 years. Well done. And in fact, that's, we've got some special events coming up this year, which we'll perhaps chat about.
We'll come out to those in a bit, yeah.
Because that's our 225th birthday, which is quite a milestone for us. And we're an independent family-owned business. The business itself started off, as I said, in 1797, when a chap called William Nicholas took a lease for 5 shillings for the whole year, and that was
a lot then.
That's 25 pence in in today's money. He was joined by somebody called Francis Perks, who became his business partner. Mm-hmm. And they continue to operate the business as recorded as a druggist, grocer and wine and spirit merchant. And then it changed hands a few times in the 1800s through to the early 1900s. And then bringing us up to date, in 1945, William Gardner Sr. Purchased the business, and it's been in the Gardner family ever since. So we're currently on to the fourth generation of gardeners. There's about 6 of them, actually, who work in the business, 3 brothers, 2 of whom have children who all work in the business. And then there's another offspring of one of the directors who runs the Old Wharf. That's Jack down at the Old Wharf in Stourbridge. So it's very much a family business, and it's interesting.
I wonder why they decided to make it a grocer, drugs store and wine and spirit merchant. I wonder what line of work they were in at the time to do that.
Going back to that sort of time, it was a kind of all-purpose grocers, merchants who they would do their own bottling from the barrels of sherry and port and that sort of thing. There were barns, stables, a washing pool, an outhouse. So there was the actual site is a lot bigger. It's a bit like the TARDIS, in fact, both inside and out. So as you see the shop, and most people will come through the front door and hear the little brass bell ring as they enter the shop. And it exudes heritage from every nook and cranny. But the building itself goes back quite a bit, and we've got 2 substantial on-site stores, as well as the capacious cellars as well, which go onto the next 2 properties. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a lot more to it than meets the eye initially. We've got about 18 members of staff as well, so there's a lot more to it than just popping into a friendly independent off license, which we do that as well, of course.
Yes, but as we were saying, there is a lot more to you in that. Tell me about your market and about your customers, because you know, yes, you can go in and buy a really nice bottle of wine, no problem with that. But you can also go and buy, go in, come in and buy a bottle of champagne that costs probably tens or maybe even hundreds of thousands of pounds. So where is your market?
Well, I like to think we are all things to all people. We've got different categories of customers. We've got our local customers who pop in, and we sell wine at £7 a bottle. So it's really, you don't have to have a lot of money to come and buy a bottle of wine from Nichols and Perks. So we're more than happy for people to come in and just chat. And if they want a bottle of something for the little friendly gathering at the weekend with their mates or what have you, it doesn't have to be too highfalutin or special. But equally, we've got people who come from further afield, and we do a lot of online business. In fact, for the local customers who like to visit the shop, our online business helps provide that amazing choice, because the online business is the lion's share of our turnover, and we have customers not just all over the UK, but all over the world. Last year, we exported to about 50 different countries. So the fact that we've got about a couple of thousand wines and 2,500 different whiskies actually in stock to serve our online trade means that somebody can come in and buy quite an obscure bottle of wine or spirits that they might have seen on our website. And if it's not on the shelf, because we haven't got room for everything that we have in stock on the shelf, we'll just nip out the back and find the bottle, and then they can walk away with it.
Now, you say we can come in and get a nice bottle of wine for around £7. Now, take me to the opposite end of the spectrum. Give me some idea of some of the more higher-end products.
Sure. Well, for many years, Nichols and Perks have been specialists in what we call old-world wines. That's principally Spain, Italy, and particularly France. And in France, Bordeaux and Burgundy. And some of the high-end wines from Bordeaux and Burgundy do run into eye-watering amounts of money. I was just checking out what we have in stock before I came along this evening, and we've got a Burgundian wine called Domaine Romane Conti, and we've got a 2014 case of just three bottles. That's three normal-sized bottles. And for that case of three bottles, it's £36,000, which works out at quite a lot per glass. You wouldn't want to spill it.
No, that's right. But my goodness me, I bet that slips down a treat, doesn't it, really?
I wish I could say I could tell you. I've had some very, very nice wines, but unfortunately not quite up to that level. But yeah, we cover all budgets, really.
Some of these wines must go back, you know, many, many years. You know, give me an example of some of the older products that you've got.
Sure. Well, fortified wines keep very well. And the oldest fortified wine we've got is probably a bottle of Madeira, which goes back about, I think, yes, 1910. So it's about 115 years old. Madeira is quite interesting because it was kind of accidentally discovered when wine was put in barrels back in the day, where the trading ships used to go around the world. It provided some sustenance for the crew and also some much-needed ballast to keep the ship on an even keel. And they found that when they'd been on their journey and crossed the equator a few times, and they came back and tasted the wine from the barrel, it had kind of improved. And that's because it had got a bit warm. And normally you think of warming wine as perhaps making it go off. But with Madeira, which is a fortified wine, which means it's a little bit stronger than normal, it actually improves the taste of it. And so the production of Madeira now incorporates a heating phase where it's deliberately warmed up and gently oxidized. That process means that it's going to last a long, long, long time. And even when it's open, it'll still continue to be good for some months after it's been open.
And I'm assuming Madeira, that's probably of Spanish origin.
Portuguese,
yes. Sorry, nearly. Nearly. I mean, I've had Madeira, and I like it. I mean, I like fortified wines, and I like sherries and things like that. And I'm partial to a Sauternes as well.
Yes.
Which I had just before, well, over Christmas when I was visiting some friends, out came the dessert wine and there was this bottle of Sauternes. I'm thinking, oh yes, just a little glass of that to go with dessert, rather nice.
A little bit of Sauternes goes a long way because the flavours are so concentrated. Yeah. It's an interesting process for Sauternes wines. That comes from the southern part of Bordeaux in the region of the same name. And there is a process of rot where there's a fungus called botrytis, and it's actually called noble rot. And in the low-lying areas of the southern part of Bordeaux, near the river, you have the early morning mist, which brings in this fungus and starts to attack the grapes. And then as the sun comes up, it burns off the mist, and then the grapes start to shrivel up a little bit. They look almost like raisins. And it's a very labour-intensive process, which is why it's quite expensive. It's all hand-harvested, and each grape is individually picked, and a whole bunch will not be all ready at the same time. And because some of the water has evaporated out through the little sort of marks in the skins that the spores have made, there's very little moisture left. So to get a bottle of Sauternes requires an awful lot of grapes to crush. But the resulting flavours are something like a cross between Oxford marmalade, honey, apricot, things like that. And although it's sweet, it's not cloyingly sweet because there's quite a bit of an acidity there. So that means that if you match it with something like blue cheese or pâté, it's quite a versatile wine, pairs with lots of different things, doesn't have to be just dessert.
I remember some years ago going on a wine tasting expedition down in South Gloucestershire. I'm surprised at how much wine we produce here in the UK, but we do produce quite a lot. And there was the inevitable tasting after we'd been walked around the vineyard. There was about 10 of us. And what I found really strange is that how wine can taste so different after they gave us cheese. They gave us a cheddar type cheese and then a strong cheese, and then we had a piece of Christmas cake without the icing and marzipan and all the rest of it. And I could not believe I think it was down to the acidity, because the wine tasted very, very different after I'd had some of the acidity from the fruit in the Christmas cake. And I thought, you really have to choose your wines very carefully compared with what you're, you know, to what you're eating. Otherwise, you can get it monumentally wrong.
I think, yeah, this is one of the things that we would like to help customers with when they come into the shop and perhaps are looking for a particular wine to go with a particular dish or even a particular cheese. And of course, we run a lot of wine tasting events, and in those events, we always like to make some suggestions for food matching, because if you get the right food match with the wine, then the whole thing is indeed greater than the sum of the parts, and the tastes and flavours in the food will match with the aromas and tastes of the wine and bring out slightly different things. So I always recommend that people take a sip of their wine, have a little nibble of whatever food it is they've got to go with it, then go back to the wine and see if they notice any difference. White wine particularly, it makes quite a difference, because all wine is acidic, but white wine is more acidic than red wine. So drinking white wine on an empty stomach, sometimes it can just be a little bit sharp. And if you have something to just temper that acidity, and a nice smooth creamy cheese is often a very good thing to put with it, something with a little bit of fat in it, then it just makes it all slip down so much easier. And then you end up thinking, I need a little bit more cheese to finish that wine, and then I need a little bit more wine to finish that cheese, and so it goes.
That's
on.
Right. Some people say, don't they, that I don't drink red wine because it gives me a headache. What's happening with the wine to give them a headache?
There are a number of possibilities, and if we ignore the one of quantity, then it might be something to do with quality. There are compounds in wine that you don't necessarily want, and there can be products, byproducts of things that are not actually in the grape, but perhaps the pips, the stalks. And if there's too much mechanical process in the harvesting and processing, that can lead to things being in the wine that you don't necessarily want. Tannin is a product in red wine. Tannin gives it the colour. tannin is something that if you've got a cup of tea that's been stewing a little bit too long and you get that slight drying sensation around your gums, like bitterness, that's tannin. And it exists principally in the skin of a red wine grape. In fact, the flesh of a red wine grape is not red. The colour for red wine actually comes from the anthocyanins in the skin. And so when those are being crushed, the amount of time that process is leaving in contact with the skins determines the amount of tannin and colour that gets extracted. So sometimes people have a little bit of a reaction to tannin. Sometimes they have a bit of a reaction to sulfites if they've been added in too large a quantity for their own tolerance. So it sort of brings me on to say that more and more people are interested in organic and even biodynamically produced wine, where the processes are right the way from the vineyard through to the production and fermentation process is less dependent on buckets of chemicals than perhaps it used to be in the past. So finding increasingly our customers are more interested in some of the sort of background to the production of the wine, which hopefully will be reflected in a quality which is better to taste and leaving them with hopefully less of a headache.
Absolutely. Tell me about some of the things that your customers require of you when they come in. What sort of demands do they make?
All sorts, really. I mean, quite genuinely, one of the fun parts of being in the shop is you never quite know who's going to walk through the door. So we might have, shall we say, a lady of a certain age who's looking for a sweet liqueur or something to add to the cocktail that they make at Christmas. So they might only pop in once a year. We might have somebody coming in looking for a special bottle of something that might reflect a birthday or an anniversary. So the year is very important. And we've got vintages of many different products over many different years. We've had people come from literally all over the world. Before COVID, we had some gentlemen from the Far East make an appointment to see us. They'd come over to London to do some business arrangements, and they contacted us, and they were known to us online, as it were, but they wanted to come and visit the shop, and out came the cameras, and we took them down to the cellars, and then one of my colleagues was filling out the paperwork for them to take their bottle of whiskey away, and it was well into five figures for a single bottle of whiskey, and everybody in between. That's the thing. We've got a lot of loyal local customers. We also supply wines to local businesses and restaurants, hotels, that sort of thing. We're proud to supply wines to some posh restaurants in London and some Michelin-style restaurants also in the Midlands. We really do have a number of different facets to the business that you don't necessarily encounter as you come through the door. I've mentioned the export before. We have also people who want to invest in wine either on what we call an en-primeur basis. That's where in places like Burgundy and Bordeaux, the wine producers will release the prices in the spring of the year following the harvest. So the 2021 harvest will now be available to purchase, a bit like buying a property off plan, in spring of 2022, but it won't actually be physically delivered for 2 years after that. And of course, people hope that the value of these investments will go up. Wine and whiskey has proven to be a very good liquid asset, if you'll forgive the pun, over the past few years. And as interest rates have been low, people look to diversify their portfolios. So we also get people coming in to invest in
yeah, you
wine
wouldn't
spirits.
Think of wine as a spirit being an investment sort of protocol, but it clearly is the case. Now, you're talking about exporting. I guess Brexit has had some challenges for you so far. How has that affected the business?
Well, yeah, it's affected a lot of businesses, of course. There is a thing called VI1, which was a form which people in the wine and spirits trade were quaking over, which basically looked as if we were going to have to get sort of analytical samples taken of each consignment of wine that we were going to have to import. Now, if you imagine one of those bottles of the three that I mentioned earlier on, you don't want to be ruining a 12,000 bottle of wine. And at the other end of the scale, these samples were going to cost about 300 quid to process in a laboratory to get a certification. Happily, the government did a U-turn on that a few months back, and they decided that actually that is a piece of red tape that we don't need. So we all breathed a huge sigh of relief. Having said that, however, there are still a lot of challenges with logistics, some of which have been exacerbated by COVID and the fact that containers are all in the wrong places. There's not enough HGV drivers to bring stuff in. So there have been quite long delays. And there are still lots of paperwork changes which we have to cope with. There's a thing called the Goods Vehicle Movement Service, GVMS, which is a new software system that was going to go live on the 1st of January this year, but was only available for testing 2 days prior to that. And unsurprisingly, it crashed. So a lot of logistics people have been pulling what's remaining of their hair out. But no doubt things will even out over the course of the following months and years. I mean, one of the things that is useful from our point of view is that we're just about the right sort of size. So we're big enough to be able to get some quite large stocks allocated to us and import in reasonable quantities. But we are small enough to be reasonably nimble on our feet, so we can adopt new processes and adapt as things change that we need to be able to embrace over the years. And I think successfully we've done that for 225 years. So hopefully we'll be able to continue in that vein.
And it's a good testament to the legacy of Nichols and Perks, really, to survive for all that length of time, you know, in business and be quite buoyant as well. Now, you're involved with the Midlands Whiskey Festival because, of course, you supply spirits as well. Tell me about your involvement with that.
Okay, well, it started off many years back when we were doing regular whiskey tastings in our cellars, and the popularity of these grew considerably, and that meant that we had to gear up and do something on a bigger scale. So once a year now, we have what we call the Midlands Whiskey Festival, which is the largest whiskey festival in England outside London. The 2022 one, which is going to be quite special because of the anniversary, is going to be on the 10th of September this year. And we're going to have about 400 different whiskies there.
Wow, gosh.
You don't have to drink them all at the same time. But it's,
no.
But significantly, we're going to be launching throughout this year, and particularly featuring at the festival, a range of our own special limited edition casks that you will only get from Nichols and Perks. So we've been, over the past year or so, we've been talking to a number of different distilleries, and we're going to have about a dozen different exclusive Nichols and Perks whiskies from all over the world.
Splendid. That sounds really, really good. I guess climate change has had an impact on the business as well.
Yes, that's another interesting one. You could talk for ages on climate change, but in a nutshell, as we know, global warming has meant that the average temperature has crept up a little bit over the last 20, 25 years or so. And the effect that that's had on wine production is interesting. First of all, to be a commercially viable vineyard, it's generally reckoned that you've got to be located between about 30 and 50 degrees north or 30 to 50 degrees south of the equator. If it's either side of that, it's going to be either too hot, it's near the equator, or too cold. Well, interestingly, that 50 degrees north meridian is about where the English Channel is. So over the past two or three decades, that's just been creeping up a little bit. So the southern part of England has now become a lot more viable consistently for producing good quality wine. The other interesting aspect of that is that the soil and the terroir, as we might call it, which includes the climate, the soil, the aspect, whether it faces north or south, and the sort of weather patterns, all of that is fairly similar to what you get in Champagne. You've got this kind of chalky limestone soil, which is named after a little village in Dorset, actually, called Kimmeridge. So it's Kimmeridgian soil that goes underneath the English Channel and emerges in Burgundy and the Champagne regions. So the sort of grapes that grow well there also do well in the south of England. So we're increasingly seeing good quality, consistently good quality wines from Pinot Noir grapes and sparkling wines such as Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, which is what you find often in Champagne. The other aspects of climate change has to be sort of predicted and managed a little bit, because there's two things that happen. First of all, with the increased temperature, we're finding that the growing season is shorter in some places. The vines get warmer, so that means you get more sugar in the grapes, which can lead to an imbalance with the amount of alcohol that is right. ultimately produced. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want the most alcohol. That can just alter the balance of flavour and taste. So some winemakers are having to pick a little bit earlier before they've reached their absolute maximum potential. The other aspect of that is that they're having to look at some different grape varieties. Good example is in Bordeaux, which is one of the world's most tightly regulated and bureaucratic and regimented regions for making wine. Lots and lots of tradition there. Well, a couple of years ago, they started to look at the possibility of introducing some different grapes in Bordeaux, and they've actually agreed that some more sort of robust grapes can be introduced into the list of acceptable mm-hmm. grapes that would otherwise be perhaps grown a little bit further south in places like Spain and Portugal, because they can be literally thick-skinned and put up with the extra heat and light that would otherwise be starting to shrivel the poor mm-hmm. other grapes that are left on the vine. So the whole industry is having to adapt as it goes. Mm-hmm. It's interesting talking to some of the winemakers as well, because those who have been in existence for many generations find that there's an interesting blend of old world knowledge and expertise that gets handed down. Many of them will have records going back many, many, many decades in terms of what the average temperatures were that year, what the weather did. And of course, they can use new technology in terms of weather systems and monitoring on with drones, with all sorts of excellent pieces of technology located across the vineyard, so that you can micromanage your growing and harvesting. Mm-hmm. So the quality of wine can be more consistent. But the other aspect of climate change is, of course, the fluctuations in weather systems. A couple of years ago, we had a very early spring, so it was warm, and it meant that some of the buds started to break out a little earlier than they would otherwise have done so. And then there was a sudden cold snap right at the end of April, beginning of May. And in one or two areas, you would be seeing 80-90% destruction of that year's production. So it's a... it's a challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was watching, I can't remember whether it was Country File or Morning Live a few weeks ago. Perhaps it was before Christmas. Can't quite remember. And they were at a vineyard in Yorkshire. And I was quite surprised, given the fact what you've just said about, you know, the sort of closeness to the equator, so being so far north. And I can't remember which part of Yorkshire it was, but they had a really healthy vine. I'm sure it was Country File. And I thought, you know, that obviously then suggests that we produce quite a lot of wine in this country, and we can produce it as far north as that.
Yes, it's still quite a challenge to produce it consistently that far north, but it is changing. And I think that if the climate change continues to push the average temperature up a little bit more, I'm not saying that's a desirable thing by any means,
but
we are in England producing more wine than we have done in previous years. Although, having said that, it's still a tiny drop in the ocean compared with the amount that we require to be imported, whether it's from Europe or the rest of the world.
Sure. I am mindful of the time, but what I do want to get in is your plans for your 225th anniversary this year. So tell me what you're going to be getting up to.
Okay, well, we will have a number of events. Nichols and Perks have a lot of tasting events, and we've done tasting events in our cellars, obviously pre-COVID. Those are now online, and we will continue to do those online. They're great fun, and we send out little tasting packs to people, and they join us on Zoom, and that's a fabulous way of keeping people in touch with us and reaching a new audience as well. So we'll be continuing with those, but we'll have some special events and possibly some dinners. We will be hooking up with some excellent and famous wine producers as well, and some champagne producers. So there's, in fact, we will be doing something probably every month over the coming year in anticipation of our 225th, moving into 226th.
That's right.
Anniversary.
Splendid. For people who are unfamiliar with you, how can we get in touch and how can we find out more about the business?
Well, I'd point people at the website, which is www, of course, nicholsandperks.co.uk. That's NICKOLLSANDPERKS, Nichols and Perks. And you'll see all the things that we do there, from investment to £7 bottles of wine to multi-thousand pound bottles of spirits, 300 different gins, lots and lots of different rums.
See, you're my kind of shop. We've said wine, we've said gin, and we've talked about whiskey.
It's an Aladdin's cave, it really is. So, and of course, come and see us. We're always happy to see people. And
just remind me where you are again in Stourbridge.
The actual address is 37 Lower High Street, but we are right at the top of Lower High Street. So if you have the Crown Centre behind you as you come out of the town hall entrance and a large supermarket there, there's a nice little slope, and if you gently roll down that slope, you'll see the black and white building in front of you, which is Nichols and Perks.
And can we give you a ring?
Please do.
We're not on the internet. Give me your number, Tim.
It's 01384 394 518.
01384 394 518. Superb. Tim Robbins from Nichols and Perks, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive.
That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.